walloping web snappers.
My spider sense is tingling.
Spider sense tells me I'm in for some trouble.
My spider sense is picking up trouble.
Anybody else's spider sense tingling?
Welcome to Walloping Web Snappers, a Spider-Man podcast where we dive into every Spider-Man cartoon ever made. I'm Doug.
And I'm Derek.
And is your spider sense tingling?
Yes, and it's embedding connections to simulate neuronal bodies in human gray matter.
My favorite. We would like to take a quick moment to thank our spectacular patrons, Bo, Carl, Eric, Katie, Jason, Zoe, James, and Keith. Thank you.
Thank you.
Shoving electronics into my brain is my love language.
Oh, boy. And I mean, I guess that is what that neurocortex is, right? It's a brain enhancer thing. Sure. Okay. It seems like you can just do everything is the way they describe it.
I don't really know what it kind of just sounds like a supercomputer, doesn't it?
It kind of
sounds like a super duper computer.
It just processes things very quickly. But I guess
I think so.
Way more quickly than anything else, I guess.
I don't know. Maybe we'll know. I think it is here for a while. So maybe we will get some clarification.
I gotta be honest, I've got some things to say about science and this show related to this episode based on some things that they say and happen. And the neural cortex is just technobabble stuff, but then it's just like sort of ends up being wrapped up in all of it. It's just sort of like, y'all just say science shit in the show that you want to be about science that just means nothing. Is really what it amounts to.
We saw that in the first season too.
Yeah,
like it's just, I think it's that was a funny. Big as we were adjusting to the series, we were like, are they actually talking science or are they just sort of like making it up as they go?
Yeah.
And I think, well, like most sci-fi shows,
which
not,
is fine.
I shouldn't say most, like plenty, they're just making it up as they go with probably light consultation.
I mean, I don't think they have any consultation, I think, which I don't, I have no issues with technobabble and sci-fi stuff. I think it's when it tries to position itself as being semi-educational, the way that it spells things out and then gets it all wrong. That's when I have problems. That's what I'm going to talk about a little bit in this episode, but
yeah,
we're not there yet.
I'm picking up with you're putting down. This is our first like full episode of the second season because last week's episode was like segments. So I am excited to talk about this one as like one actual long episode story instead of just like bits and pieces. And Doc Ock is back, so I'm particularly excited about that.
Yeah, this is like the real season premiere, really, is what it is.
Pretty much.
Based on what it's everything.
If it weren't for the last segment of last week's, this absolutely would just be the season premiere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the episode we're talking about, of course, it's Marvel's Spider-Man 2017, Season 2, Episode 2, entitled Take 2.
There are three reasons I'm not giving up. Isaac Newton, Thomas Edison, and Albert Einstein.
Shut up. We're fighting here.
Sure. Happy to explain. Three great scientists, all my heroes, but I heard Newton dropped out of grade school. Edison said he failed almost 1,000 times before he perfected the light bulb. And rumor has it, Einstein struggled to learn basic math. You know what that means?
Means I don't care.
Wrong. It means a true hero never gives up.
Did you know Edison said he failed almost 1,000 times before he streamlined the design of the light bulb? That he was completely dismissed by his peers? If he had not been given more opportunities to prove his worth, we would never have benefited from his world-changing discoveries. I know second chances don't come easily, but like Edison, I am not going to give up. I don't expect you to understand, Spider-Man.
Everything is in alignment.
I used to think you were some weirdo, but now I know you're our weirdo. That was supposed to be a compliment.
The synopsis per IMDb is, Peter is excited to start his second year as a student at Horizon High and as a superhero. He discovers Doc Ock wants a second chance. Lots of seconds and twos in this episode.
Yeah, the two thing is interesting. And I'm not saying I am this person.
Okay.
But I do think if you're being pessimistic or if you're being cynical, we were speculating last week, like, is this sort of like a resetting of the pieces? Is there anything sort of weird about Shinnick leaving and reestablishing some certain stuff? The name Take Two, like,
oh,
you know,
oh,
if
no.
it is sort of a resetting.
Oh, no. Yeah.
I don't think that's it, but.
I mean, could be, though.
You know?
Yeah.
Let's try this again.
Yeah, because it does. I mean, we are sort of seeing this whole episode is kind of a redo of Doc Ock's initial superhero arc in a way.
A little bit.
Obviously, we'll see where this goes, but it does feel like it's just sort of set, like kind of resetting a little bit back to like, you know, midway through season one and mm-hmm. just being exact kind of in the exact same spot. He kind of like it's, oh no, Spider-Man is uneasy having to work with Doc Ock, who is like not quite really get good at being a superhero, but like wants to do good. Like that's exactly where we were,
right?
In like mid season one. But we're back here again, obviously, you know, there's we'll see where this goes because it right. might not necessarily go to the same place.
And there's plenty narratively to support this title without any sort of like meta commentary being required. Uh-huh. But I just think it's interesting.
I think that's a good thought because I mean, you said you're going to keep the showrunner thing in mind. Yep. Well, this episode aired on June 18th, 2018, which was the same day as the previous episode. So they aired back to back.
Interesting.
This was, you know, what a weird, I mean, you know, again, this is more of a season two premiere than the last episode was. So I guess it kind of makes sense. Again, written by Kevin Burke and Chris Doc Wyatt. This episode was directed by Sol Choi.
Hey.
Yeah, we're familiar with him. He's one of the most frequent directors on the show. But since we last covered the show, he has been a storyboard artist and assisting director on Transformers Earthspark, which I've never heard of, but apparently has been running for a couple of years. So
I've heard of it, and that is where my knowledge ends, to be totally honest.
Yeah.
As far as characters we're introduced to, we are introduced to Wildpack. Who is from the comics, but I didn't know about. I didn't know that Silver Sable had her own Wild Pack team.
I've heard the name before, and I know her, and I know Puma, but I'm really not familiar with like that. I'm not familiar with them working together as a group or the other two characters.
I have to imagine, and I could be wrong, but I have to imagine that means this is not one of those like iconic villain teams. Who knows? Correct me if I'm wrong.
The idea of Silver Sable working with a team in general feels like, I feel like she's better suited not working with a team.
Yeah.
Especially not a team of like gimmicky, big personality supervillains. Like it doesn't feel like that's really her vibe.
I like her teaming up.
Yeah.
But I don't know that I like her in like an established team.
Yeah. Like leading. I mean, I guess there is something funny. They don't do it in this episode, but I do like the idea potentially of Silver Sable, who is like kind of a straight lace, like works really well on her own, having to lead team of like wacky wild supervillains. A dude who is like part Puma and a well, actually Paladin and Battlestar are just sort of like generic.
I was gonna say in like, concept, I love that idea, but these three are not the wacky.
The way it's executed in this. The way it's executed in this episode, they work extremely well together. So none of what I said really applies to this one. It's more like that idea of it. I could get
but by. I agree. The idea is good.
As it stands in this one, they're just kind of like another set of enforcers or whatever. They're just sort of like, they all fight well, and that's what they're here to do, which is, you know, there's other stuff happening in the episode, so it's fine. It's just kind of funny.
Yeah. Yeah. They serve that exact role. That's a great comparison. But we are introduced to our Silver Sable here in this series. She's voiced by April Stewart. April Stewart is a member of the South Park voice cast, has been for like 200 episodes or something like that. She voices tons of female characters, including Wendy Testaberger, as well as Stan, Kenny, and Cartman's mothers. So she's just like a staple over there at the moment, and probably will be for a while, I would imagine. Yeah. She also voiced Celine in Wolverine and the X-Men and has provided many voices for video games, including the Carol Danvers version of Ms. Marvel in the first two Marvel Ultimate Alliance games. I don't think she voices Carol Danvers in the third one. I couldn't find that was the case, but that would have been cool if she got to voice her as Ms. Marvel and then also as Captain Marvel across that series. She voices Kayla Silverfox in the X-Men Origins Wolverine video game adaptation. And Jean Grey and Psylocke in the Marvel Heroes MMO that was relatively short-lived, but plenty of Marvel voices throughout video games.
Wow, yeah.
And then we get the other three Wild Pack members. Paladin has a voice actor. It's Trevor Duvall. He doesn't say much, but he says enough. And we've talked about Trevor Duvall. He was Blizzard from season one, that iconic villain who we had a hard time remembering the name of a few weeks back.
Well, it's such a good name, Doug. It's an amazing name for a super villain.
Just a really sweet, unique name, Blizzard. we also get Puma, who just growls, and those growls are not credited to anyone. And then we get Battlestar, who is hot, but doesn't growl nor speak. He is fully silent the entire time.
He is eye candy. He is absolutely just the
That's
eye candy.
Pretty much what he's here for, I guess.
For us specifically, I should say.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Yes. There's something for most people in Wild Pack. And Battlestar
Puma's cute. Puma's a cutie too. Puma's absolutely a cutie, but Battlestar is the hot one. 100%.
You know, Silver Sable's always gonna knock him dead.
Oh.
You know.
Yeah. Paladin, it's like, I guess if you're into generic white guys, sure.
I was going to say, he's just a guy.
Yeah.
He's just a guy.
Spins his guns. Okay, good for you, guy. There's never seen a mercenary in armor on this show before. Sure. On a Spider-Man show, period.
I know.
You really stand
Thrilling,
out.
Thrilling, Paladin. Thrilling. But that's primarily who we're introduced to. Everybody else is folks we know, either returning or who we saw in our, you know, premiere. So,
yeah.
Let's get into it here. This episode opens mid-battle at an Oscorp Tower construction site. So I like that. Ooh. I like that they are acknowledging that that is still under construction.
Yeah, because it blew up at the end of the Spider Island stuff, right? Yeah, so, which is funny because that was a conversation that we had last season about, like, is the show really going to deal with the destruction caused by, like, kaiju and stuff? And they, like, kind of a little bit did with Horizon High being closed for, like, a day. But, like,
I
really like the that bit of continuity because they don't even call out, like, it's not like Spider-Man's like, yeah, it was destroyed when the Spider Island stuff was happening. No, it's just like, if you know, you know. Like, if you watch the show, you know that it blew up. But if you don't, it's just, you know, it doesn't really hurt anything either. So I like that use of continuity.
Yeah. If you don't know what happened, it's just a cool skyscraper construction site, which I think are always fucking cool. Like the idea that you have like full ass construction sites on top of skyscrapers is simultaneously cool as hell and terrifying to me.
Yeah.
So Spider-Man is attempting to stop a trained mercenary named Paladin, who tells him to shut up and give up. And Spider-Man responds to this that he will never give up because his heroes, great scientists like Einstein, Newton, and Edison, all struggled in some way, but they persisted.
Okay. Bulk of the episode is going to be a conversation right here about this. No, not really. But I do have a lot of notes about this because I fell into a little bit of a rabbit hole because red flags were thrown up when Spidey said, because he doesn't just list off great scientists that he admires. He lists off three things that each Einstein, Newton, and Edison did that are related to like a failure of some kind. And then obviously they became, you know, household names because of their inventions or whatever. And all three examples that he lists off are wrong in one way or another. That's the thing.
Well, one of them, I think I know one of them. Edison basically like stole the light bulb, right? Like he just nabbed. I mean, he worked on it, but like 1,000 attempts. I don't know.
The Edison thing is actually the most complicated one out of all of these because it has become, I think, for good reason. I think it's like been a common thing about Edison is that it's sort of like the pedestal that Edison has been on throughout history and the way he's taught in schools is just kind of incorrect. Like he's credited as being like the inventor of so many inventions when the reality is that like he was very good at, like he was an inventor. It would be wrong to say that he didn't greatly innovate things and invent things, but he was also very good at being front-facing to the media and buying patents. Essentially, he was just very good at working people. And that's why he's sort of the name. He's good at branding. Right. And there's also like a very famous feud with Tesla. Like that is that is a real rabbit hole to go on. It actually doesn't really apply in this case, because that was more dealing with like electrical currents and some other inventions that they had. But like, there's some fucking wild shit with the Edison and Tesla fuel. Like Edison like killed a bunch of animals like in front of people to like prove how dangerous Tesla's type of electric current was.
Good lord, it was all fabricated, dude.
Like absolutely wild shit. I think if they haven't already, which I don't think they have, there needs to be like a big budget, like Christopher Nolan directed, like Thomas Edison versus Tesla movie.
Edison.
That would be fucking
incredible. Actual feud.
Like about the actual feud. I mean, the character of Nikola Tesla was in The Prestige, but like basically The Prestige, but instead of Hugh Jackman and Christian Bale's magician characters, it's like that movie, but with Edison versus Tesla, like just fighting each other and trying to one up each other and like destroying themselves in the process. Like that shit would be so fucking fascinating. That stuff doesn't really apply here, actually. What Spider-Man says about Edison is that Edison failed almost 1,000 times before he perfected the light bulb. It is a common quote that is attributed to Edison that says, "I have not failed 10,000 times. I've successfully found 10,000 ways that will not work," which is a good quote. I couldn't find where he ever actually said that. So I think it might be one of those things that like maybe never actually said. It also is 10,000.
It's mythology, perhaps.
Right. It's mythology. He might have said that. And I didn't go super deep on this. Sure. It really was just like me doing different Google searches. But I think that is a quote that is rumored. He has been rumored to have said. Also, I think Spider-Man says almost 1,000. And if he's referencing this quote, the quote is 10,000 times. So like they get that wrong. I guess 10,000 is technically almost 1,000, but
I also think 10,000 is hyperbole for the sake of making the point.
Right. So. Right. It is. So Spider-Man says it as if it is fact. I did find a couple of things because other people, I found some things or people were trying to sort of like figure out where the quote came from and everything. There's an interview in 1890 with Harper's Monthly magazine where Edison said, "I speak without exaggeration when I say that I have constructed 3,000 different theories in connection with the electric light, each one of them reasonable and apparently to be true, yet only in two cases did my experiment prove the truth of my theory, yada, 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 yada." So he does reference 3,000 different theories. There's another one where he like references, I know several thousand things that won't work. I think in that one, he was just talking generally. And he did apparently try 10,000 different chemical combinations when he was coming out with the rechargeable battery, not the light. So like, basically there's never been almost 1,000 applied to the light bulb. What I will
but
give
the
credit
idea
for,
of thousands of attempts at things is a common thing to be able to find out about Edison, or at least Edison talking about his thousands of attempts.
Right. So like they're pulling from like an idiom that already exists. Right. So like I understand, and I will give them credit because Spider-Man doesn't say invented the light bulb. He says perfected the light bulb. And then I think Ock references this later too, and just says, I forget what he says, but he says something to that effect. They never say invented. So I think they were smart enough to recognize that Edison didn't invent the light bulb, which that's like the big sticking point.
I do love
usually.
That.
Yeah, because light bulbs existed in some fashion before Edison was even born. It was really more like making them actually last and making them affordable. And like Joseph Swan is credited with essentially inventing like what we know as incandescent light bulbs now, where it's like the carbonized paper filaments. Like he invented that. And then Edison ended up sort of like riffing and innovating on that, making them like thinner or something and work a little bit better, and actually ended up working with Swan on sort of bringing those into the public. And then Edison bought the patent for it. And because he's such a good self-promoter, essentially was like, yeah, I did this. This is all
right.
Me. Like that Swan guy wasn't involved. So like that's,
he did this?
That's how he ends
I did
up.
This.
Right. That's how he kind of becomes, that's, there's more to it, obviously, but that's sort of the short version of it. That's how he ends up being known as the inventor of the light bulb. So like credit to this show for not saying invented the light bulb. They're smart enough for that. The almost 1,000 times thing is kind of just pulled, like it's,
that's the mythology of Edison that has, cause what they're doing here. And I know you looked up the other two, so I'm not trying to cut you off on this, but clearly what they're doing based on even just this one example is they're pulling from like what have become sort of mythological figures, even though we know they're real. Like, at a certain point, they become these mythological sort of inventors. And they didn't necessarily, like, dig deep enough to pull, like, specific examples, it sounds like. Or, like, correct specific examples.
It wouldn't bother me, but I think what's annoying about it is that it's, like, it's if it was just a character throwing, like, rumors about or mythology about people out there, it'd be fine. But, like,
yeah,
Spider-Man says it with such conviction that it's like, I think one of them, I forget which one of them he says, well, is rumored to a blank. And then it comes up multiple times and multiple characters who are supposed to be super geniuses all reiterate
the thing
what
right
he
there.
Said.
And that's that the thing is the three people, three separate characters make the same sort of assertion. And these three characters are undoubtedly geniuses. Like, even within just the context of this episode, one of them asserts their own genius over and over and then makes that exact reference. So I definitely get where the sort of like red flags and the compulsion to be like, hold on a second, like,
yeah,
check them, you know?
And Ock would absolutely, Ock's one of the people who restates the Edison thing specifically.
Right.
And he would absolutely be the kind of character who would have like, who would have done the research and like known all the caveats to that quote or known that it was like not fully attributed or that it wasn't like, well, he would not be the person that would just throw out like a rumored mythological thing about a person from history. You know?
Right. And Peter has, I mean, one of the first things they establish in this series, like way back at the beginning of the first season, is that like Peter's heroes are these people. Peter essentially like stands historical and modern scientists. Like he doesn't just admire them. Like he knows everything about them. So the fact that he and Otto are making the same assertion. And then the third person is Gwen, who is basically also just a genius in all fields.
I want to do the other two too, because it's also interesting. Because they're honestly even like more wrong than the Edison one is. The Einstein one is inexcusable because they say that Einstein was struggled with math. And that has been like long since disproven. That was never the case. He was very, very good at math as a child. The closest thing that people can find is where that rumor started was that he in school was, or I think in college or something, was like more interested in physics than his math classes. Oh. Like I think he said, or that I think there was a point when he said he's not as good at math as other world-class top physicists. Not that he struggled in math. Like that is not the same. And that one is like the most easily, like you could have Googled Einstein math and you find tons of pages of people being like, where did this wrong rumor come from? Like that's like common knowledge that that's an incorrect thing that wasn't true. So that one, I think I'm like actively angry that that's thrown
into
this.
He was basically just like modest.
right. He was just modest. And the Newton one, that was just kind of down the middle. Like Spidey says he dropped out of grade school. He didn't do super well in school because he spent a lot of time pursuing his independent interests. I think it was your classic case of like, the kid is bored learning the lessons that he's not interested in. And because he's a genius, like just goes into doing his own thing with his own projects and then doesn't pay attention to his homework. And then he didn't drop out. He was removed from school by his recently widowed mother against his wishes, trying to get him to work on a farm to make money. And then the master at the King's school later on persuaded his mother to send him back to school to complete his education. So he never dropped out of school and he did complete his schooling.
And people can't see that you keep putting quotes up at dropout, which I think is a really important thing to add, because like it's just not a comparison. Like talking about students dropping out when Newton was in school versus students dropping out of school now, or even just not in the United States in different systems, is just not a comparison. It doesn't make sense to use that terminology.
And it's like the thing too,
and all
like,
stuff that you very easily were able to find.
It was not hard. There's so many. I mean, it was almost overwhelming how many websites and blogs and stuff exist of people trying to like disprove this or you know, break down the real information or whatever. And I think like, and I know it's sort of like going hard on this like one little line, but it's like because it basically forms the backbone of this episode.
Right.
So many
and
times.
And it didn't need to be that specific to still be the backbone of the episode.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. Or they could have like done like a modicum of better research and found a real scientist from history that I'm sure has failed. And
I'm sure people could groan at this, but like use Tony Stark. Use Max Modell, like use an in-universe character that you don't have to get right. Like
I think that's a good point, though, because that kind of speaks to my, I think, what makes me feel kind of weird and uncomfortable about the show's approach to this kind of stuff is that I feel like the show sometimes feels like it's positioning itself as being educational, and it's not. Like, the way that it right. will stop and have Spider-Man or another character spell out real life historical people, like things about real life historical people or real scientific concepts, and present them with such conviction that, like, they are teaching you, the audience, the kids in the audience, they are teaching you something. Like, it really feels like a PBS thing sometimes. But the thing is, if you're watching an educational PBS show, the things that they're teaching you are real and actually researched. In this show, it clearly isn't, which, again, I have no issues with a sci-fi show and especially a comic book superhero show just, like, doing some techno-babble bullshit. That's totally fucking fine.
Or but making to present up their own scientists. That's
making
different.
Up their own scientists. I think they could easily make up their own scientists. Or, like you said, use Tony Stark, Max Modell. Totally fine. But the fact that they tried to seem to want to present it as being something educational for kids, and that they're teaching the wrong lessons, and it's just TV writers who don't know shit throwing stuff in that sounds sciencey. Like, you can't do that. It's, first of all, the worst of two worlds, because you're watching and it does really feel like characters are stopping to teach something to the audience, which is never fun when you're watching an action show. But then the fact that I'm not even actually learning anything for real just makes me mad. And then you're literally giving the incorrect information to children. So it's like, it ends up being kind of weirdly irresponsible. And it's like, it's not the worst thing in the world, because kids learn wrong things all the time or whatever. And it's not like it's like harmful information, but then it's just like, well, then why are you doing it? Like, if you're not actually going to research this, then why are you putting this into the show?
No, I agree with you. You're teaching mythology. Like I've said, you're teaching folklore about these real historical figures. And two, it's undercutting your point in the first place. And it's a point that you can make without having to be so specific or connect to the real world. It's not like they're making a complex point that is like hinged on using these figures. Like, the figures themselves don't actually have anything to do specifically with the point they're trying to make. And when you dig into it, they very specifically have nothing to do with the point you're trying to make. So, like, I think they just, like, it's like an unforced error, if we're going to use sports metaphors that this Peter Parker wouldn't get. Like, it's just, you didn't need...
What's sports ball?
What's sports? It's just like a mistake that you didn't need to make, and you only made because you put yourself in the situation to make it, you know? So I get it. I think it's worth touching down on that, because I think it's a good broader point in the context of this show that does clearly want to admire science and, like, stress the importance and coolness of science to its young audience. I appreciate the tangent. I think it's a good one.
Thank you. That is all that I have to say on the. It's going to come up multiple times, but that I think I've said all that I need to say at this point.
You now have the context for when we groan at the next instances of them making this point. So all this came up in his fight with Paladin. Because he said, I'm never going to give up.
We're
two,
like,
sentences into the notes.
2 minutes into the episode.
No, you're being generous. We're like less 30 seconds in. 30 seconds into the episode. We haven't hit the opening credits, which I think we're maybe 90 seconds into this episode. This is all because Paladin told him to give up, and he's like, I'll never give up because my heroes never gave up. And that is actually important, because it will come up multiple times, right? This episode is about second chances and not giving up, giving people second chances and being open to your own second chances. So it is an important piece of this, which is why that tangent was worth it. So Spider-Man does ultimately defeat Paladin, but as he's whipping off, another important piece for this episode, it is revealed that their battle was being monitored by Silver Sable, who says to herself that they now have exactly the data they need. What could she be up to?
I like the construction worker who's like, I used to think you're a weirdo, but now I know you're our weirdo.
And then is like, that probably sounded bad, but it was meant to be a compliment.
It's fun. I like that. It's fun.
I love the New Yorkers. Throw in more New Yorkers interacting with Spidey.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, God. I don't want this to be a super long episode because I'm tired, but we got another tangent on our hands.
Great.
We're going to have to dig into they're all happening right at the beginning of this episode. Is a real 1-2 punch of things that make me angry. Which an episode that otherwise, like, I like fine, like, everything after this, I enjoy.
Yeah, don't give up on us. I think we like this episode. Hang in there.
Yeah, I like this episode. It really is just this beginning. It's just sort of like, you are specifically targeting me intentionally, yeah. aren't you? Because on his way to Horizon High, Peter receives a call from Harry. So the first time we're seeing Harry this season.
And where's Harry? Where's Harry, he's Derek?
In Europe, right?
He's not in New York.
Yeah, he always goes to Europe in every show, right? Isn't he? Does he say this in Europe, or am I putting that on him? He's doing some global Oscorp stuff now that he's taken over his dad's business and he's calling in. But I think he says Europe.
I think you're right. It just bothers. I don't know if this is what you were getting at, but it just bothers me specifically, and I imagine it bothers you a little bit, given that the Peter Harry thing was one of our favorite things about the show. That Harry's not in New York.
I see what you're saying, because I was getting kind of the fact that, like, it seems like Harry is always going off to Europe whenever they try to ship him off somewhere, and it's just kind of funny.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I mean,
it doesn't matter. That literally doesn't matter. What you said is more important, because it is sort of like, I think a worry that we have going into this season is like, what kinds of things are going to shift with a new showrunner. And like, who knows what sort of mandates aren't coming from Marvel or Disney, you know? And I think the Harry Peter relationship in the first season was such an amazing surprise. We love that relationship so much. It was wild how central, given how much so many Harry Osborns and so many Spider-Man iterations have sucked, or if they haven't sucked, have been like kind of outside of his relationship with Peter is very rarely a very central thing. It's always kind of like a side thing, if it even exists at all. And in this show, it's so central. Like, there's no romance for Peter. The closest we get to romance is with his best friend, Harry. Like, that was such an important arc. And so the big worry is a sort of like, because that felt like it did stand out as being something so wildly different that the show has presented. Is that going to be a thing that goes away to be more of a classical Spider-Man, and or focus more on the spider friends, essentially, like the spider people of this show? Are they going to kind of sacrifice Harry as a major player? And it's not looking good, considering he wasn't appearing in the first episode, barely, like, only a passing mentrance
in the country.
It's not even in the country in this one. And he's the most that we get from Harry is just a quick, like, video FaceTime call from him. It's a little bit worrying. My hope is that, you know, Harry had a lot to do, especially at the end of last season, that they're just kind of having him on the sidelines to get through some other arcs, and then we'll bring him back in a big way for stuff that's actually important to him, rather than like having him around, but like not letting him do anything. Cause like, to be fair, I don't really know where he would fit into this Ock story that they're telling. Like, they never really had much crossing paths. So like, I don't have a problem with that. It's just, I don't know. We're looking out for it. The flags have been raised. Our goggles are very, very heavily tightened on the Harry Osborn of it all now.
We've honed in on this one.
Very honed in on it. We will be keeping an eye on it. I can say I have actually seen the episode after this one, and Harry is not in it.
No.
So
that's concerning. It's just, it would be such a bummer, because I just am such a fan of this Harry. I think this is genuinely my favorite. Certainly in cartoons, this is my favorite Harry Osborn. I think that also applies to all the movie versions we've seen. And it's just, and largely what I've learned is that it's because it's just so easy to turn Harry Osborn into a worse version of the Goblin, just to turn him into a pumpkin bomb throwing pyromaniac without any sort of like actual depth or like dimension to him. And this show didn't do that. And it was so refreshing to have like a fully formed Harry Osborn. I mean, part of what it is the relationship, but really it's the fact that Harry was this full character that was more than this one note, second rate Norman, you know?
Yeah. And complicated. So. Like, he really did. Like, he made mistakes, was like, he also wasn't like, we joke sometimes about him being kind of like a precious beacon of light, because he often was, but he also made mistakes. He also, he did also make mistakes and was conflicted and could be kind of an asshole sometimes, but in ways that made sense for where his character was at any given time. Like I think where we landed was that he was kind of really the real protagonist of the first season, not Peter, honestly.
And we saw through Peter's eyes, but the story was about Harry.
Right. And part of the reason the flags are raised so high is that it's sort of like, I could see someone on the outside of the show viewing that as a mistake to have this, to have it so positioned to Harry and need him out of the way to make Peter your main character again.
That person is so wrong.
I know.
So wrong. Also, it just feels homophobic. I'll say it.
Yeah, look.
I don't know who you're going to pair Peter up with, but he already had his perfect pair.
Yeah, look, I caught this episode. It puts the headband on Gwen. It puts her hair down a little bit more. Are they going in that direction? Look, I don't know. I hope not, but
I can't necessarily be disappointed in a vacuum if it's a Peter Gwen situation, but knowing that he already had the perfect partner, the perfect romance, the most complicated, compelling romance I've seen for him in a while. Feels like I'm being attacked.
Yeah. So that's eyebrows raised number one. And yes. Then when he's talking to Harry, this is when we're following up the thing we put a pin in last week.
Oh yeah.
Because, you know, Harry's like, hey, you know, have a great first day of school, just being a supportive friend. And Peter just immediately just like, Big Debbie Downer unloads on him. He's like, well, it might be the last day of school if I can't come up with some good footage of Spidey to pay my tuition so I can stay in school, which I'm like, okay. And Harry,
your boyfriend's just wishing you a nice day.
I know. And it's just like, Jesus Christ. And the thing is, it's not like he just unloaded on this thing he's been holding in and need to talk to someone about in this right. moment, which I could buy. No, Harry is aware of this because Harry says, Peter, I already told you I can help you out with that. I can mm-hmm. cover your tuition. I am a rich man who owns an entire company. Like, mm-hmm. I can pay your tuition and I'm your best friend. And we know all each other's like deepest, darkest secrets. If anyone can help you out, it's me. So Peter has already told Harry about his issues.
Right.
This wasn't a case. That's the thing. I think the one saving grace of last week is that it is perfectly in character and very true to life for many people's situations that you just like want you want to be independent and handle this yourself. Uncomfortable asking people for money, uncomfortable talking about your money situation. That is so true to life and so true to this Peter Parker that he wouldn't want to talk about his problems.
And to lots of Peter Parkers to keep his problems to himself.
Right. So I would 10,000% buy the storyline if Peter just refused to tell anyone in his life that he was having this issue. If Max Modell was literally the only person who knew that Peter needed to pay his tuition. I would 100,000% buy
right.
it. I wouldn't like, you know, and I wouldn't like it, but it would feel true to the character and it would be like he dug his own hole. I hate the fact that Peter off screen apparently told Harry his problems, having to know that Harry would immediately turn around and offer to pay for him, telling his rich friend that he can't afford tuition and might right. be kicked out of school, his dream school. And then for Harry, basically fishing for Harry to offer to pay for his tuition, only to be like, no, I have to handle this on my own. Like, I'm sorry, that's just fucking emotionally manipulative to Harry.
It does feel that way, doesn't it? Because it's like, it would be one thing, and I know that this is nowhere near what they were thinking, clearly, but I'm with you. I'm with you. Because if he already told him, then at that point, don't bring it up. If Harry keeps bringing it up, that's one thing, right? If Harry keeps checking in and says, like, I just want to check because I don't want you to think that the door is closed. You know, can I help? That's one thing. But for Peter to bring it up and bring it up almost in this sort of like, ha ha, ha ha ha, you know, sort of way. It does feel a little bit fishing like, which is a bummer. And I don't disagree that Peter Parker would be one to be hesitant to accept that help. Right. Especially this one. There's plenty of precedent for it. Mm-hmm. One thing that drives me nuts about this, though, is like, and this is nitpicking. I think what we were talking about just previous to this is not nitpicking. It's like, it's Peter's behavior and all that sort of stuff. My nitpick, though, is that Peter's determined to get a job to pay for his tuition, which is adding a bunch of stress and going to get in the way of him being able to be successful at this school or any other school he ends up at. Uh-huh. Harry's offered to pay. You can still get a job and pay Harry instead.
Oh my God. Like,
you can continue
to
go to school. Harry's not going to charge you interest and he's not even going to be like a stickler about it. Just let him pay for school, continue to get your job and then pay Harry. Like, it drives me a little bit crazy because
I can't believe I didn't even think about that because that's different. Such an easy,
That's different literally than paying May back because having May pay for it and then paying May back, they're both struggling. But like, mm-hmm. Harry doesn't care. Like, you can still, that's, yeah, that's where you can kind of have it all, right? Where it's like, I feel like I need to be responsible. I still need to get a job. I don't want to take this for free. I will pay you back. But like, yeah.
Oh my God. It'd be such an easy solution. Yeah. And it's
so
like,
then in my, I just think don't bring any of this Harry stuff up then, right? If it's, if you're so determined to have him at the Bugle because he needs to pay for school, then have it be a secret, or just don't have Harry ever offer, you know?
Yeah. I think that that's right. I think this is because for people who might be listening and like yelling at their phones, like it's because they need to work at the Daily Bugle. That's all it is. Like,
we know
all of this is from like the in-universe Watsonian point of view. Obviously, yeah, the Doyleist explanation is that they want him to work at the Daily Bugle, and Peter Parkers often work very well if they're in a tight financial situation.
Right.
And an easy way to do that is to say he lost his job at school, has to pay for the expense of school, that gets him to work at the Daily Bugle. It's a fun wrinkle to add complexity and conflict to the narrative for the season. I can 1000% get behind that. I think that is perfectly fine. And the argument as to him bringing it up to Harry and having that conversation is that they want to reestablish that for the audience. So he says it in conversation. But with all of that said, there still, I think, would have been an more elegant way to do it that isn't selling out Peter as a character, and isn't putting the idea in our heads. Because I feel like it feels very self-conscious to me that they're sort of like, well, everyone's just going to think that because Peter has this rich friend, that Harry could cover all of his bills. So why is Peter still struggling? That's an issue that every Spider-Man comic where Peter and Harry are friends is going to come up. Of course, it was original. Smallville had that issue because they wanted to have the Kent family have financial issues when Clark is best friends with Lex, who's constantly offering him fucking free trucks and stuff. Like, and they had to work that into the narrative of, like, you know, dealing with like why the Kent family would refuse to accept that money, or like the parents' pride refusing to do it and how that causes conflict with Clark. Like, that's the thing that's going to come up. That's the thing that come up with Spider-Man comics. And so that is a thing that they, if they really wanted to, they could play with. But I think that they're in a position where it's sort of like they either go really hard and truly like intentionally make Peter look like he's making a mistake by not accepting Harry's help, which I think that they could do, but they don't want to. I don't think they want to do that. They don't want to make Peter look bad or look like he's making a mistake. They want it to just be like, isn't Peter in an awful situation? Poor guy. Like, that's where they stop at. So they can't do that. They also have to keep, they also want to acknowledge for the audience who's savvy enough to know about the Harry end of it all, to acknowledge why Harry wouldn't just be paying for his school, but they can't come up with a smart, like a good, clever enough reason to justify why he ever wouldn't, why Peter wouldn't accept that money, or why Harry wouldn't just fucking wire him the cash anyway, you know?
My concern is a cynical one in that, like, are they just being too black and white about what responsibility means? Like, did it not even cross their mind that, like, Peter can be responsible while also accepting help? Because that would be concerning for showing to children if you can't have a bit more of a slightly nuanced take on what responsibility can look like.
I mean,
version of responsibility does come across as not being allowed to ask for or accept help. I think that this episode, luckily, maybe not intentionally, but maybe intentionally, does kind of fight against that. But I'm concerned.
I don't think that they were thinking that at all, though. I think it really does just come down to conflict for Peter at Horizon and Daily Bugle. I think it is just those two things. And, you know, it also could have been a Marvel higher up being like maybe the same one who's sort of like, hey, people who are writing No Way Home, make sure that movie ends with Peter being poor. Like, it could also just be like, let's make sure that this Peter is like absolutely poor. Like, he might be at the super genius school, but we need to make the money problems a thing because that makes Peter relatable, is what someone's saying, you know?
I get it. There are certain things that really make that really establish Peter Parker as this really relatable, grounded character. I do think there was something really cool about what they were trying to do with the first season. And I'm just worried that they're going to basically say, we didn't actually want any of that. So all that stuff, replace it with all this other stuff that works, but we know already and have seen before, you know, like I appreciate, like, it's to me, it is the difference that we talk about with a swing versus not a swing. Like, it's not a swing to have him be doing all the traditional Peter Parker stuff, even though I like traditional Peter Parker stuff. The first season was taking swings, baby, and some of them worked, and I'm sure some of them would maybe have flopped eventually if they kept doing them. But who knows? Like, keep swinging, yeah. You know? I like that the show is swinging. Well,
The back to basic stuff in the first season, but I think the stuff that didn't really work for us, it was when it took the weird swings that we liked it more.
Yeah.
And I do worry about this season being like, no, we're back to basics though, right? We're back to
That's
basics.
That's what we were trying to do in the first place. This is take two. This is our second chance to go back to basics.
Yeah. God. Yeah. So I don't like any of that. That's a bummer. Yeah, but that's our narrative
Luckily,
for the season.
I think we move forward in this episode generally, though, past all of the worst parts.
I do, too. I think the worst stuff is relegated to the very beginning, because once Ock shows up, then it's a wildly different story that we're watching. Yeah. You know, it really has nothing to do with this stuff.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Back to the actual episode itself.
Yeah.
But yeah, when Peter declines Harry, he's like, well, you know, the law of averages dictates my luck is due to change. So, of course, as he says this, that's when students begin screaming and running. So something bad's happening.
Yep. Something's going on.
Yes. Peter learns that Dr. Octopus himself has returned, and we blow our air horns. Ock declares that he's come for what is mine, which everyone, including Max, is like, okay, so he means revenge. He even like says it very menacingly.
It's Miles my time.
Yeah. You know, Miles tries to stop Ock. Oh God. We don't see Miles as Spider-Man in this episode, even though Peter is like, Miles, let's suit up. Miles says, no, I will not suit up. Let's forget that I'm Spider-Man. And instead remember that I'm a science genius that built security bots, which fail very miserably. After Ock, I mean, that's another red flag that I'm raising. When will we see Miles as Spider-Man? And once he becomes Spider-Man again, how often will he show up as Spider-Man? Well, it remains to be seen, because he's not in this episode as Spidey.
Yeah.
But these bots fail miserably. And Ock actually has to save Peter and Gwen from getting crushed by one of those malfunctioning security bots. That's when Ock's like, I'm not here to hurt anybody or destroy anything. I actually came for forgiveness and a second chance. And then a very funny moment where it's sort of like, that's what I meant when I said to come for what is mine. Was that not clear? And everyone's like, what? It's very funny. Like, it is truly like just him absolutely misunderstanding the situation.
Yes. I love it. I love this Doc Ock so much. I love that he's back. He's so over the top. That has not calmed down or chilled out at all. It's, if anything, it's like ramped up a little bit. I love the moment where he turns to all the other students and is like, you got it. And they all just look horrified. It's so good. Such a good gag.
We did an episode with, it's been years
a
ago.
A long
now,
time.
Yes, but yeah. with Lillian, and she, you know, had a lot to say about how, you know, she reads Otto as being on the spectrum, on the autism spectrum.
Yeah.
And this feels like very, absolutely supports her take.
A very just classic idea, sort of misunderstanding where, like, I thought what I was saying was very clear, right? Like, you guys got that? And everyone's like, no. Like, just communicating on very different wavelengths.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. And that recalibration, I'll say it forever, that recalibration that Lillian did for me and this Doc Ock was like amazing, because now I feel like I love this character so much more because of that particular layer that she added to my reading of him.
And it feels very clear, and it's not like the jokes are at his expense. It is just like the humor of this comes from just the misunderstanding that Otto and the rest of these people are just, like you said, not on the same wavelength at all. And the humor is just sort of like that. It is just that misunderstanding, not
it's
the
just
fact
present.
That he is doing, he's not, yeah, right. Not the fact that he's doing anything particularly wrong.
So Otto explains that he spent time in a rehabilitation facility for superpowered criminals called the Cellar, where he reflected on his actions and also managed to earn 3 doctorate degrees. He offers to make up for his actions by returning to teach at Horizon for free. But Max refuses this and basically just says, like, we can't trust you. Like, that's not that easy, buddy. Like, you're not welcome here. But sure, you can go get your belongings. Otto's pretty chill about this. He's like, all right, I get it. Like, I'm going to go get my stuff and then I'll be out of your hair. This causes like some dissension among at least our main cast. I'm assuming if it's among them, maybe this is a topic of conversation among the school. But basically, Gwen is like, Max is being really hard on Otto. It's very clear that he's put in the work to sort of like be a better version of himself. And Max just like totally shut him down. And Peter and Miles are like, Gwen, he's like literally a supervillain. Like, what are you talking about? But I like this because neither one of them, like both of them are presenting their points sort of like in very, like on sort of an equal playing field, right? Like I get where Gwen is coming from. I don't think the show paints her as like naive or like unaware. Like she just is somebody who in this moment is like, I'm extending grace to this person who clearly has spent time reflecting on what they've done.
Yeah. Yeah, and she, you know, she knew Otto in the pre-supervillain days. Yeah. She, you know, her uncle is the Jackal, so she has experience with like knowing someone who's a supervillain. So probably
that's
is just
such a great point.
immediately more sympathetic and like open to the idea where it's sort of like, you know, I always wished my uncle could reform, so it would be nice if I could see that happening in Otto instead. You know, I think it makes total sense. And you can tell that she's just more of a chill person because her hair is looser and she's wearing ripped jeans now. Like, I just thought that was an odd. I'm just joking
about
that. She's
a sophomore now.
She's a sophomore. Yeah, it was such an odd choice because I feel like she was so like her character design was so like tight and straight laced in the first season. She's just like got her like stylish jacket and her hair is like tied back very tightly, and now it's just sort of like she's cool, she's got ripped denim now, like it just felt like kind of like I wouldn't say it felt out of character because her character has never been like super defined on this show. It was just like,
yeah,
I wouldn't have expected that, but sure, I'm here for it, I guess.
Growth in the form of ripped jeans. Who knew?
I guess so.
Well, at the back-to-school assembly, Max announces the new annual project, the Neurocortex, a self-sustaining database modeled after the human brain itself, created with advanced chemistry and electronic engineering. So we kind of touched on this. I think it is just a supercomputer that I'm guessing is meant to be as smart as a human brain, or on the road to being as smart as a human brain,
or smarter. It seems like,
or smarter. Yeah,
I guess so. I mean, basically, when they list off the things they can do, it's just everything that has ever existed does what it could possibly do or innovate.
It's a miracle computer. Whatever.
Yeah. Whatever. Whatever. It is an absolute like MacGuffin in the show. It's just a thing that people are going to talk about that's going to get stolen. That is very important.
This is their Venom symbiote sample for this season.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Oh, for sure.
That was something that carried several episodes of the first season, and this will be carrying, I'm sure, at least a handful of episodes based on where this goes. Mm-hmm. So Peter does remark specifically at the sort of like chemistry and engineering combination that Anya would be like super into this project, which I like. I like that he's like, oh my God, this seems right up her alley. And he's correct based on the things we know about what she does. But she's not there. And it turns out she's not at that assembly because she is instead spending time attempting to cure Alexei of his Rhino transformation, something that she's apparently been working on since Rhino's debut. But she does remark like, I'm only allowed a certain amount of hours because he's like under watch and care. So like anytime I can go try, I'm going to go try. So this has been an ongoing thing, I guess. And I'm curious as to like what this means, given our sort of like awareness of resetting of things. Because like apparently Alexei has just been Rhino this whole time. So like, is this similar to the Otto thing where like, spoiler alert, they're going to cure him by the end of this episode. Is this just a way to give Rhino like another origin? Oh.
Maybe like they do another Rhino later. Maybe. I don't know. Actually,
I'm curious to see why they cure him.
Right. I guess, I mean, narratively, I think that curing him at the end of this episode, obviously this is jumping to the end, but like, I do think curing him, I think is meant to be the big turning point where everyone is convinced that Otto is a good guy again. It's sort of like,
that's a good,
you know, cause it's sort of like he can do whatever he wants with Spider-Man, but it's sort of like, the trustworthy thing is to like
for the school
basically for this the thing that makes him so trustworthy is that he like he has literally saved a student's life, someone who was the victim of mad scientist. They kind of like they put it like I forget who says it, but sort of like look what Otto did to Alexei or whatever. And I'm like, Otto wasn't the one who turned him into Rhino. Like, he mind controlled him, which was awful. But like, what right. Alexei is now has nothing to do with Otto. But I feel like they're almost trying to treat it as if Otto is undoing the bad that he has done, all represented in Alexei. So I do think that that is they needed something big for Otto to do, that like a big good thing for Otto to do. And I do think curing Alexei is like the perfect thing for that. So I think that speaks less to like their plans for what they wanted or didn't want to do with Rhino, more than it was just a great thing for the narrative for him to do.
Yeah. No, that's a great point. I mean, you're like absolutely correct as far as like what it's used for. And I guess I will be very happy then if they just let Alexei be cured. Like at this point, if that's what they're using it for, and I think you're right, that is what they're using it for. If that's all they're using it for, then I'm perfectly cool not seeing Rhino ever again in this series. I think it like makes it cements its effectiveness, and it affects its, or like cements its impact, you know?
There's plenty of other big animal themed villains that can charge at Spider-Man. They don't necessarily need Rhino for it. And this Rhino was hella ugly, so I'm happy to never see him again.
Troll ass Rhino.
Fucking troll ass Rhino. God, an ugly design.
You did mention this though. Like, there is some attribution of what happened to Rhino to Otto, and this they bring up so that they can basically have Anya also disagree with Gwen that Otto does not deserve a second chance, right? So we know where all four of our main characters stand. Basically, Gwen's the only one open to Otto's second chance.
Right. So later that evening, Max calls Peter into his office again to discuss Peter's tuition woes, and says he's going to need, he's like, I want you to be able to stay on as a student. Like, I think it's, he says the board is who's kind of pushing back on it. You know, at needing Peter's tuition. But he's like, you know, I do want you to stay in school. You're one of my brightest students. I really need your help with the neurocortex. And he shares some of the challenges he's encountered so far. Otto's walking by. He overhears and makes a suggestion, says some science words. I think he says exactly what I said at the top of this episode about brain matter, gray matter and brains or whatever. Max sternly dismisses Otto, but briefly stops him to follow up with more info, because he's like, that actually was a pretty good idea, though. And he agrees to put Otto's suggestion under consideration. So Otto is still not back in their good graces, but he's sort of like, getting his paws back into the Horizon High stuff by throwing out these little suggestions.
I like this little Max moment. I mean, I don't like that too. Max is, I don't like when my faves fight, you know what I mean? But I do think Max has been this... I just thought of something, Derek. One of the things I loved about the first season was the sort of brewing conflict amongst the adults that all seemed to center Max Modell.
Yeah.
And that's usually where we got to see these sort of like other sides of Max Modell, where we usually saw him through Peter's eyes. So he usually was this sort of, you know, beacon of hope character. But anytime he interacted with another adult or another scientist... in an adult capacity, because Otto's like 17, maybe 18 at this point, or 19. I don't know. He's a teenager.
He's got to be 19 by this point.
I think he's 19. There were always little glimmers of like, maybe there's something we're not seeing about Max Modell. And the reason I brought this up is because I do like these moments like he has with Otto, where like Max Modell is this kind of like flawed person who's like almost too harsh with Otto when he simply could just be like, no, I need you to leave. Instead, he sort of like snaps at him. But as I was saying that, now I'm wondering, like, are we going to ever see any of that adult stuff with Max Modell?
I'm just so
curious to see what this second season under new showrunners looks like. I know. It's like throwing my whole mind into like chaos and confusion and concern, even though it's probably really going to be just fine.
It's really easy to spin out from it, because it's sort of like, it's weird because these first two episodes have not been like super different tonally from the first season or anything. It's just sort of like little hints of things that change, which you expect. It's just like, the question of sort of like, what is a natural progression of a show changing anyway, that it would change in season two regardless versus what feels like a very pointed, we're trying to change this because of the new guard, you know?
Yeah. But that's a TBD. This episode doesn't really give us anything about that. I just thought of it because I wanted to praise this moment where he makes a mistake and sort of like walks his mistake back and is like, okay, I don't actually come back. I'm just a little curious about this. Maybe we do need you a little bit.
I think I have a little bit of the opposite read on that, though, because I think that it's showing him flawed in that he's not really sticking to his own conviction, where it's like if he really truly feels like he can't have it's unsafe to have Otto at this school and he wants him out of there, like he's very sternly sort of like, that's cool, Otto, but I want you to leave. I need you to leave.
Yeah, yeah. That's like the responsible
The fact that he's sort of like, oh, but God, my science, though, and like still mm-hmm. kind of goes and sort of like, actually, give me your help. I think that there is something flawed about him not sticking to his guns enough when like.
True.
It is so fair. Like, regardless of our love for this Otto, Max is 100% in the right to be like, I need to protect my high school students from this fucking supervillain. And like the fact that he's like still kind of inviting the supervillain into the world, even after he specifically said that you need to get out of there, like that is kind of a red flag that Max is like, he is a little bit too into a science project to like fully be willing to like shut Otto out, because, you know, as we see by the end of the episode, Otto is the perfect person to work on this project. But, if Max really believes it would be unsafe for him to be in that position, he needs to just keep that. He needs to put that wall up. Hard and fast, you know?
Yeah, I don't disagree with you at all. I think what I was talking about shows his like sort of complicated reaction. He would never speak to Peter like this. Granted, Peter's not a supervillain, but he would speak to other adults like this. You know what I mean? You're totally right. Like, if Max is protecting his students, he gives Otto zero wiggle room whatsoever. But I love all that. I love it. Max is sort of an easy character to treat as like this beacon of hope specifically for Peter Parker and one of the like constant goods in Peter Parker's life. But if you're just looking at Max Modell kind of in his own context, he is this complicated, flawed character.
Guy. Yeah.
I love it.
I like it.
We also, once again, don't forget Silver Sable's in the picture. We once again see that she has been spying, this time on Max, Peter, and Otto's conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So what's she up to?
The next day, shortly after, Peter builds a camera drone to get footage of him being Spider-Man, because he can build drones now. He finds Silver Sable breaking into an area of the school. Uh-oh.
That's what she's up to.
Yeah. Breaking into a school. How wild is it that Miles has these like security bots with guns in this high school, just like roaming around shooting guns? Feels pretty unsafe.
The security robot, I think, was like a funny joke in the first season as something that was like Miles' project. Yeah. I don't like them at all so far. I mean, we've seen them in one episode, but I think if they're going to be a presence in the school, I don't like them. I like them as a project. I don't like them as an actual thing that exists in the school.
Well, like, I think they're trying to make a joke out of it in this one that, like, isn't it funny that they're bad and then get, like, demolished? Like, I think Peter says, like, oh, bad day for like, security droids or whatever he calls them. Yeah,
which is probably effective for, like, their intended audience. But, like, no, it's not funny.
I don't know.
It's dangerous.
Because I think if, like,
they fire wildly into the room that she is trying to break into.
if they were going the full Star Wars route, and they were like actually droids with like funny, silly personalities, and it was funny seeing them get beat up and react to it, I could see the humor there. As it stands, they're just like robot cops that shoot in a school that just happen to have Miles's voice, which just feels kind of gross to me.
It sucks.
Like, I don't like that. I don't like that.
They should have just stayed his stupid pet project. That's where they should have stayed.
Yeah. Well, Doug, they
and he should have abandoned it.
Yeah,
because it was a bad worked. Like because they didn't work.
But Doug, remember, they need a reason for him to not suit up as Spider-Man ever. So if they have these security bots that he's controlling instead,
I can't go down another Miles rabbit hole. We'll save it for another episode because it's going to keep coming up.
yeah.
Because there's something there. There's something like the show could have made it such that Miles is averse to using his superpowers too much for X, Y, and Z reasons, but that's not what they're doing.
No, it's weird. I don't like it. Yeah, I think we will definitely have more to talk about in the season, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Once we get especially get a better picture of how they're using him. But anyway, you know, Peter knows this is going on. So as Spider-Man, he confronts Silver Sable, quickly learns she's not alone. She's accompanied by this team we've referenced, the Wild Pack, which is herself, Paladin that we saw at the beginning, as well as Puma and Battlestar. Having studied him earlier, which is, you know, what they were doing at the beginning, Wild Pack is able to hold Spidey off long enough for Sable to steal the neurocortex.
Yes. So she's got our item of interest for the season. Outside, Spider-Man finds Doc Ock tied up and learns that Ock was also trying to stop Wild Pack on their way out of Horizon High, which is pretty cool. Ock offers to help Spider-Man, which of course Spider-Man refuses, very similarly to Max, basically saying like, I don't have a reason to trust you. Like, there is no reason I should trust you, dude. Like, you were... And this is Spider-Man talking. This isn't even Peter. Like, so this is like hero talking to villain being like, no way we're teaming up. We tried that, buddy. Uh-huh. You know? So it makes perfect sense. But then Ock asks Spider-Man specifically if you are aware that Thomas Edison failed over and over trying to invent the light bulb and was disregarded by his peers. So basically his way of saying he's not going to give up.
Not true. Thomas Edison wasn't fucking disregarded by his peers. That's like just a straight up fucking lie. Like, that was absolutely not a thing that ever happened. He was very good at controlling the media narrative about his stuff.
Yeah.
So, good come at branding, on.
Like we said.
Good at branding. Right.
But this is his way of being like, I'm not giving up. And this resonates with Peter because he just did the same thing earlier in the episode. There's also this other moment where Peter's like, I get it. You can help. You have a bunch of degrees. And Otto's like, I didn't tell you that. So there's like this, a couple sort of coincidental sharing of similar information. So
it's my ears really perked up to that. I'm hoping that's leading to where I think we probably are interested in that leading, but we'll see.
There are a couple places that this conversation is one that I think we will revisit if it's as important as I think both of us think it might be. For both of those reasons, the fact that Peter slips and says something that only Peter would know, not Spider-Man, and the fact that Otto uses the exact same sort of example that Peter used at the top of the episode to sort of... you know, relate to Spider-Man.
Yeah.
It resonates with Spider-Man, but it's not enough to convince him. And so Otto, you know, I was going to say thwips off, but I don't know what the metal arms do. Clanks off?
Clanks off.
Leaving Spider-Man alone. The next day, Peter delivers his footage to J. Jonah Jameson, who not only loves it because it's really good footage from the drone, but specifically calls in Eddie to use Peter as an example and basically does the why can't you be more like Peter to Eddie Brock, who doesn't say anything, just looks upset, grunts, and walks away. This isn't good. This is not good.
It's kind of, I mean, it's really, I don't know. I mean, again, it's all going to depend on, because obviously we all know where the Eddie Brock thing is going. Like, it's so obvious. But like,
unless they're just fucking with us because they know that we think we know where it's going.
You know that they're not fucking with us. Like, but I think that's why, so it depends on where it's going. It does feel just very weird to me.
Right.
To introduce this character who has no lines. We don't know anything about him other than he is like being abused by his boss and will inevitably blame Peter for it because Peter is being positioned as better than him. It's just like, I don't mind the idea of, because obviously Eddie is clearly an adult and Peter is a teenager. So I don't mind the idea of like trying to play with like probably making Eddie feel even more shame than like your typical Eddie would, because not only is he being like humiliated by Peter Parker, he's being humiliated by a 16-year-old Peter Parker.
Yeah.
So like, I think that's a really interesting actual kind of angle that they're doing with this that I don't know has ever been really explored in the same way before. I just don't know how I feel about like getting none of this from Eddie's perspective yet. Like I'm hoping that they're doing an interesting thing where we're just going to only see him on the sidelines. And then we'll get a full episode with Eddie where we really see his perspective on all of this as we learn who he is. And maybe it'll work out well. As it stands, it just feels a little bit weird. Cause it's just like, here's this guy being abused, and isn't he going to be mad at Peter for it? Like, yeah. I don't know. I'm hoping that I will retroactively like it a lot, depending on how it goes. Right now, I don't know how I feel, and if I feel anything, it feels just kind of weird.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly hope you're right, too, and I hope I also retroactively like whatever they're building up towards, if they're building up towards something in a clever way. My concern is that, like, because Peter is a 16-year-old, and Eddie is clearly a full-ass adult... And because Peter is a 16-year-old delivering footage to the Daily Bugle, my concern is that Peter Parker, the 16-year-old, isn't actually going to spend that much time at the Daily Bugle, because it would be kind of weird for him to be there all the time outside of delivering his footage. So I'm like worried that it's like a way to get him at the Bugle and set up Eddie, but not actually get like the goodness of the Bugle, because he doesn't have any peers there.
That's so true.
Like his competition is a full grown man.
Like this literally is just.
And Betty's a full grown woman. So she's not like a teenage secretary.
Yeah. Who also has no lines in this episode either. That's a really good point. Like maybe
there's ways to weave Jameson in though. So I'm not like fully writing it off.
But it does feel like, oh, maybe the reason, maybe they weren't trying to reset stuff and give a new narrative conflict for the season so much as they just wanted to do the classic Eddie Brock journalism story. So it's like, well, we got to get Peter the Bugle fast. How do we do that? Make him lose his job at Horizon, and now he's trying to all of the stuff we've been frustrated with was just a domino effect, because they just really wanted to get classic Eddie Brock Venom. Which, oh my god, if we want to go get down the really cynical rabbit hole, what if?
We're spiraling.
There was never a plan for there to be an Eddie Brock Venom in this show, because they did the Flash Venom thing and had played that really fun in a fun way. But then it's sort of like, because I think the timeline would line up, because the first Venom movie came out in 2018, right?
Stop.
So it's sort of like, oh, but that Venom movie though. But although no, that doesn't make sense. I don't know though, because.
I don't know that like requiring your cartoon aimed at kids, making sure that Eddie is
Venom
the
movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, that doesn't really make sense, because Sony is very much the Venom thing.
Yeah.
And Disney is doing this show, and that's more MCU. So actually I will backtrack on that. That would be I think that'll be a really easy cynical view to have, that they're just trying to line up with the Venom movie. But I don't think that would make sense for the way that the stupid fucking way Spider-Man rights are split up and who would care about who. So actually that's a good thing, because that means it really was more like, I think the creators just wanted to have the Eddie Brock Venom and probably just really like the classic Eddie Brock story, which is fine. But I still think there's that weird domino effect of the only reason that they did all of that reshuffling and Peter being poor was to get Peter at the Daily Bugle so they could do a Venom story. And then maybe when the Venom story happens, this Daily Bugle stuff is just done. Like, potentially. I don't know.
I know I've said this before. I just don't remember what about. I have never hoped so much that I'm wrong. Like, I'm seeing like the worst futures for this sort of like resetting of the pieces. And I just hope so badly I'm wrong, and I will be so happy if I am.
Yeah. But why are we so terrified about where the season's going to go? Like, I know why I am.
It's because I think we had something that was kind of cool and innovative, and I don't necessarily dislike the idea of traditional elements of Spider-Man, but I do have an issue if you are just going to try to erase the cool stuff and just plop the traditional stuff on top. My concern is that they are just going to erase things in order to introduce the traditional aspects instead of actually weaving them in sort of a creative, elegant way. Like, there's ways you can introduce Eddie after already having Flash. There's ways you can incorporate the Bugle after him having his job. And I guess they're doing their... Maybe the best reality is that they actually are doing it as we're speaking, right? Like, they figured out a way to get Peter at the Bugle that isn't really a problem. They explained it. If they hadn't, we would have been complaining that they didn't explain it. But they did, you know? If they suddenly introduced Eddie, because he suddenly exists, I think maybe we'd complain that, like, that was out of nowhere. They're not doing that. So maybe the better future is the one that we're currently witnessing and we're just not recognizing it that. I'm just worried that they are going to basically say, we didn't like the direction you were going in, so we're just going to plop this one on top of it instead and sort of forget all the stuff from before.
Everybody likes a classic Venom story. We're not going to do that weird shit you did. We're going to do something. We're going to do the same stuff that everybody likes. Yeah.
So that's my concern, right? Like I can admit that I am being sort of like defensive about the first season in the way that I might also be defensive about the traditional stuff if people fully disregarded it, you know?
So. Yeah, protective of it. I think.
Yeah, I think complex and complicated like Max Modell.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I think too, like the meta of it, as I think for us, like I think we didn't go into this show expecting to like have a connection with it just because of its reputation, and then I think being probably. Yeah, I think it will be safe to say probably the only Spider-Man podcast in existence that. Definitely has dug this deeply into the show, but also I think probably loves it more than like any other Spider-Man podcast. Advocates on behalf of it. And so it's sort of like, I think we probably, the two of us, feel very protective of it. And it's just sort of, and don't really want to lose that. Like, cause it's like, it would be so disappointing if it's just like, we watch this sort of like, not really feeling this anymore, man. And it's just like, well, I guess we've joined the ranks of the people who don't like this show now. And I don't think it'll ever get that far because I think there's been enough goodwill from the stuff that it's built up. But like, I think there's always that sort of fear that it's going to feel like that, you know?
Well, and like, I'm not above admitting that like, there's a part of me that's like, it's cool to be the advocate for something that you think is special. So if it suddenly stops being special and unique and sort of like is treading similar territory, it's like,
it's hard to advocate.
Damn, I feel betrayed a little bit. Like,
I know it's hard to advocate. It's hard to advocate when it's just like a pale imitation of stuff you've seen done better, which the best stuff in the first season wasn't bad. It was just different. Right. So I don't know.
So this is all concern. We can't make the value judgment yet, but it is concerned. So hopefully we are wrong. I would love for this to sort of take those traditional elements and really surprise us with them while weaving in and sort of following up on some of the stuff. I mean, if we get to see some Max Modell interacting with adult scientists again, that would be encouraging. If we get to, if Rhino stays Alexi, that will be encouraging. You know, if Harry is not written out of the picture, that's encouraging. So
yeah, there's things that I know about this show in the future that like I haven't watched, but that I just generally know that give me hope, but it's all out of context. So we have to get there. We'll see how we feel when we get there.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. We were at Eddie, right? Eddie didn't speak, but showed up. Okay. So he gets his first check from the Daily Bugle. It's very exciting. Embarrasses Eddie in the process. Not his fault. Shortly after getting this check, Peter walks up on a conversation between Max and Gwen in what looks sort of like a cafeteria, in which Max is stressing the complexity and uniqueness of the neurocortex's cyberchemical interface. The point of all those words is just to say, this thing's extremely unique. There is nothing, no project that we could whip up that is as special and unique as this. And the purpose of stressing that is that it inspires in Peter an idea that, oh, shit, I shouldn't be looking for the wild pack. I don't know how to track them. But if this neurocortex is so special and unique, if I know enough about it, I can just track that. Like, if it has a unique cyber-chemical interface, that's what I'll focus on. And it works. He finds it, and he finds wild pack. So,
yeah, I think it's pretty clever. I also like the idea that, like, wild pack is so... so good at what they do that they're like Silver Sable's like, okay, props to you for finding us, but like I could literally see you from a mile away. Why are you just walking out in the open where we could just shoot and kill you? Like, I love that. It's so smart.
Right. It's amazing because he successfully tracks the location of the neurocortex, but he doesn't stumble onto them. They basically are just like, bro, you walked right up to us. Like, they could have stayed hidden. They were fully capable of just like staying hidden. I love that. I love that so much.
Yeah. And I also love too that like they are fully like punch clock villains. It really is just sort of like, if you have a lot of money and pay us, we'll give you the neural cortex. We don't give a shit. Like, just pay us money. That. We're just mercenaries. You know, and it's just Spider-Man literally just can't do that. So they got to fight.
And this really is kind of important. The fact that like they're seen as capable and formidable for Spider-Man, mm-hmm. because it needs to be the case that Spider-Man like can't defeat them by himself, because he fights them and they overpower him, and the only way that he doesn't end up basically dead is because Doc Ock shows up. So like he needed to be having trouble so Doc Ock could enter the picture and help and sort of force that team up that Spider-Man was like not open to earlier.
Yeah, it's not like he has another Spider-Man out there that could have showed up and helped them.
Yeah, he's like alone, you know? Like, there's just no one else that he could, like, call or ask for help, or who might notice that he's missing, or, like,
who would have been going with him in the first place.
Maybe they both could have, like, technology on them that could, like, signal to the other one.
Yeah, yeah.
Drones. It's not like he literally built a drone that's following him around with like camera footage that Miles could theoretically have access to just to like check in like a baby monitor if something goes wrong.
Miles doesn't like literally go to the same school and know about this whole situation and also is invested in the neural cortex either. Like he would have, like he's doing his own thing. He would have nothing to do with any of this.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's an Otto team up with Spider-Man. They're fighting. What's going on? They team up against the Wild Pack. They bond over having utilized the same technique to track the cortex. That's why Otto showed up when he was there. And Ock actually sacrifices himself to save Spider-Man from a major blow from Puma. Like not sacrifices himself as in he died, but like it's like his equipment is very heavily damaged.
He jumps in front of the way.
Yeah. And Spidey disposes of Paladin and Battlestar. So this basically sets up a situation where Silver Sable's beginning to escape with the cortex, and Ock shares that he has equipped his tracker to essentially blow the cortex up from a short distance, and is like, "I am hurt. There's no way that we'll be able to get to her in time before she takes off. So I've got to just blow this damn thing up so they can't use it." Spidey's like, "No, there's always another way." Reiterates that fucking Edison story. So there you go. But Spider-Man slingshots himself onto Sable's jet. So we get a Spidey slingshot. Hell yeah.
Yes.
Fights her off.
The choreography of that was a little bit weird, I have to say. Like, I feel like the way he flung himself was just odd. I just want to point it out. As somebody who's like maybe a connoisseur of the Spider-Man slingshot, it's a little weird. A little weird positioning. Yeah. Slingshot should end up with like feet first.
Yeah, considering this is an episode with Spider-Man and Doc Ock fighting four villains, like, the animation and stuff isn't bad, but I feel like it's also, like, I feel like there's a lot of cool stuff that they could have done with a lot of these fight sequences and, like, the Spidey slingshot and stuff, and it just kind of it looks fine.
It doesn't help that, like, all four members of Wild Pack kind of have, like, boring powers.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this episode isn't trying to push any boundaries with doing cool fight sequences, I guess, ultimately, which is just, it's just a bummer. I just always think back to, I know it's a high watermark but like, I always think back to some of the group fight sequences that Spectacular Spider-Man had.
Oh, sure.
And it's like the creative stuff that they would do. And it's like this show has these really nice, great flourishes and moments in it where I know that they can do cool stuff. They just seemed like they sometimes just literally choose not to even try to do cool stuff with their fight sequences sometimes, and it's just a bummer.
I agree.
Yeah.
And having Ock literally be injured to the point where he can't really fight anymore doesn't help.
yeah.
Especially because Ock Spider-Man team up, their powers can be so cool together.
I know.
Throwing each other around and swinging off tentacles. They can do such cool shit.
They both represent multi-limbed creatures for the purposes of justice. Like, it's
really
cool.
I love that. I'm so glad that you brought that up. So good. Because they're bonding. They're realizing, like, Ock's like, holy shit, you're smart. You do science stuff. And then, it's cute. It's a cute moment.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, Spidey's able to get the neurocortex off, so he's able to get that off of her. So yeah, they've got it. She escapes, right? They don't web her up or anything, doesn't she? No. She doesn't.
No
she
one
doesn't.
Escapes.
She webs
none
her
of
up.
The four
That's
escape
because right, they all end up prison in the end. Never mind. Yeah, totally forgot about that ending. So Spider-Man and Otto return to Horizon, deliver the neurocortex. Otto's like, I'm not going to overstay my welcome. I just helped out, but I'm going to dip out. But he stops when he notices a couple of staff carrying Alexei through the hall. So then he turns back and is sort of like, you know, that cortex could be used to cure the Rhino transformation. And Max is like, fuck, I never thought of that. Like, can you help us out, Otto, and like make this work? And he's like, I got you, bro. So despite Anya's doubts, who she still is like, I don't feel good about this. They do go through with Otto's plan. Otto is in the room. He helps out. But it works. Alexei is cured. He is no longer the Rhino. He is back to his human form.
Oh, and he seems like he has like no recollection of anything that happened while he was Rhino, perhaps? Like,
that's...
Did this boy miss like 6 months of his life?
That sucks. What a poor guy. Poor guy. Like, what a terrible situation this kid... Just right? Like got randomly...
Although
like,
I guess that means like
day.
His last memory is just partying.
That's true. Just randomly got turned into a rhino one day and then blipped out.
Oh no. Basically, yeah. Well, this is all like fine and good because Alexei is cured, but the problem, especially as you sort of presented it earlier with like Max potentially not being the most responsible headmaster here, is that the next scene is at an assembly where Max is announcing the return of the neurocortex to Horizon and also the return of Dr. Otto Octavius to lead that project. Which
and as an instructor, he is going to be a teacher.
And as
too.
An instructor. Like he is an instructor. Right. He returns as a teacher and he is also sort of like the lead on the neurocortex project. Which, look, I love Otto Octavius. I love this Otto especially. I would love for him to just be a reformed sweetheart trying to help and make up for his mistakes. I have a hard time believing that will be the case if he is constantly in the room with this supercomputer, this miracle computer that he specifically said earlier in the episode would be at its sort of most potent when it is mimicking and connected to a human brain. I don't know what it means. I just feel like I know Otto Octavius enough be concerned.
Like, my thinking throughout watching this entire episode, and this is, I know I said I watched the next one, but this is not reflected like on what does or doesn't happen in that one. This is what I was thinking when I was first watching this was, Doc Ock is the master planner though, right? Is this just part of a master plan?
It like, very easily could be.
Because like, and I know that he's fake reformed before and stuff too.
We've so literally like, seen that before. Yes,
we've literally seen that before. So like, I agree. I would love to see this Otto just be like a cool guy. Like they pull the rug out from under us with Harry, and he never became a supervillain. They could do that with Otto, but I don't. I have my doubts.
I would be I had my more doubts. Optimistic. I would be more optimistic that could happen last season than I am this season where I'm expecting more traditional storylines. So I am worried for Otto Octavius and therefore worried for Horizon High and Max and Spider-Man and all his friends. I once again hope I'm wrong for my own selfish reasons.
I think it's more a matter of it's just a matter of time and also
know,
a matter of how
when,
is
not
really
if.
The only questions, right? Yeah. But also, but in universe, like, God, it does feel so irresponsible of like, Max, baby steps, man. Like, why does he have to be a full-fledged professor again? Like, have him help you work on the neurocortex with supervision and then work up and build your trust back to eventually become a professor. Like,
he's been chill. The guy... When you've said no, he's been chill, right? Like,
right.
He didn't
like,
present
he's not forcing your hand. Like,
right. He didn't say, I will help Alexei if you reinstate me. He just said, I will help Alexei.
Yeah.
And I know that that is what, like you said, like that's what convinces the school that he's trustworthy. But like he didn't, it wasn't an ultimatum. He just offered to do that. If you let him do that and said, I'm sorry, you still can't work here. Like everything we've seen points to him having a chill reaction to that. He might continue to try to butter you up, but like he'll still leave. He had his whole box of belongings ready to go.
Yeah.
He was allowing himself, arms and all, to be escorted by a shitty security drone. Like,
Right. Yeah. Look, so again, I love narratively and out of universe that Otto is here. It's great.
Yes, me too.
But Max.
Max, buddy.
Bad call, buddy. He's honestly, love him to death. He's not a very good headmaster.
You know what,
school.
Though? What I think is really good, we this sort of reflects what we were talking about earlier, but it also reflects conversations we had in the first season. One thing that bothers us both is when a character is like totally sold out by decisions that the writers make them, you know, carry out that they wouldn't carry out or that sort of just like fuck up things for the sake of story. I never feel that with Max. I always believe that Max is capable of making these mistakes in universe. So he makes this mistake and I buy it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think he just really is just kind of a bad judge of character. And I think he puts the science projects ahead of anyone and everything else. I think he genuinely cares about the students, but I think he cares about the science stuff. I think he cares about his science projects more. I don't think he realizes it, but I think he does. And so he makes rash decisions at the expense of his students, not, you know, even when he doesn't really realize it.
At the expense of his students and using the students as like a false reasoning or excuse. Like, I think you're right. I think he does care about his students, and I think that's true and genuine. But because he does truly genuinely care about his students, I think he's able to apply that to his staff and to people who don't necessarily deserve or have earned sort of the room or space or forgiveness in this case that he's giving them. And he can sort of reliably or realistically or believably hide behind how much he cares for people when you're right. It really is about, Otto probably could make this thing work.
And I love how complex and flawed he is.
I think he's a great character.
Really awesome. It's a great character.
Really good. Really good.
Speaking of just really, really good fleshed out characters, in cells, Paladin in these prison cells is complaining to Sable, like, getting thrown in prison was never part of the deal. And Sable's like, my client's plans are long term. And I'm sorry, I'm just flagging, like, the master planner. This is part of his master plan. Remains to be seen.
I don't think you're off base by suspecting that, and I will be 0% surprised if that ends up being the case, largely because he's been reinstated and will be around this thing that she tried to steal constantly. Also, I'm not going to say it now, just in case there are people watching along. If there are things that can be surprises, I'm going to let them be surprises. But there are certain things in this episode that I am taking note of, just in case it turns out that Otto Octavius is the master planner, because I will give the writers credit for including them. If that ends up being the case, they have actually put some things in here.
Yeah.
That absolutely could be, if that's where this all goes, are pointing towards that, which I love.
I like the idea that if this really is master planner, part of his master plans, I think that there's something really smart about the way he's like, you could then perceive this episode as him kind of lightly weaseling his way back into Horizon High. And I think it works because you can read it either way. If he turns out to have been authentic and earnest about all this, it works. But if he really was just manipulating people, I think it works too. I think it works either way. Yeah. I like that a lot. I think that is very effective. Yeah. I like that a lot.
Yes. Well, the episode ends back at Horizon High, where Peter catches a broadcast of J. Jonah Jameson using his footage to disparage Spider-Man. Shocker. And this puts him in a bad mood, of course. Miles, Gwen, and Anya then catch up to him, and they comment on his apparent mood. And so he shares, like, you know what? I just thought something was going to go a certain way, and it's not going that way, and it's, like, bumming me out. And then Gwen tells him not to dwell on the bad, because, of course, you know what happened to Edison and Newton, right?
Shut up!
And Derek, even without all of the extremely valid and important stuff you brought up at the beginning of the episode, I hate that Gwen is the one who says this. I hate it so much because it just means that this is like a thing people in this universe do. And to me, it detracts from the impact of what they were trying to do with Spider-Man and Ock both having this as their sort of like motivation for not giving up on either themselves or other people or whatever they can. Like, that is literally what connects the two of them at the point at which they need to connect, is the fact that they both make this sort of reference independently of each other. Like, so for Gwen to then do it at the end of the episode, like, oh, okay, so like it's not really special, it's just like a thing every scientist says.
Yeah, that's so true. I was so mad about the context, I didn't even think about it that way. That's a great point. That
I was so annoyed. I was so annoyed because, like, all the stuff you said is so true, but like I appreciated the like cuteness of like what they were trying to accomplish. This takes away the cuteness. It makes it not cute anymore.
Yeah.
No, it just makes it a weird dorky thing that they're all wrong about.
Oh my god, that's a perfect way to put it. Weird dorky thing that they're all wrong about.
And it's a thing that this show continues to be guilty of, which is putting a bow where it doesn't belong.
if you're gonna fucking change for the second season, why couldn't you change that shit? Stop with these goddamn bows. Just leave
no
them
bows
untied.
Necessary.
We don't need them.
Right. We don't. We really, really don't. It literally could have ended. We say this so much, especially with this show. It literally could have ended with Sable and Paladin in prison talking about their client. That would have been enough.
God. So annoying.
Oh, there's so many. And it's not just this show. There are other shows we've talked about doing it too. But this one's especially bad at it. There's so many episodes.
Weirdly bad at it.
Of, yeah. I'm sure, all kinds of cartoons. But we talk about Spider-Man ones. So I see it so much with Spider-Man ones where I just want to go in and like chop off. I know it's not literally film anymore. But just chop off the end of the film reel. Just cut it off with some scissors. Don't need it.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Lost forever. Yeah. That's media that can be lost. I don't need it. Bring Stan Lee back, the narration, bring him back, and chop off these bows.
My God.
We did it.
We did it. Talk about these faces of the episode.
Yes. I am so entertained by the visual of Otto Octavius in his full Doc Ock costume, full uniform, no lab coat over it, no casual jacket, nothing. Goggles on, arms out, with his like box of belongings from his desk being escorted out of the building by his security.
Oh my God.
It's so funny to me. He's just a normal guy. Just a normal guy leaving a normal job, you know? Yeah. No big deal.
It's so absurd. I love how absurd it is.
It's so goofy. Why is he still wearing that costume?
Yeah, that's such a good point. It's not
Sir,
like
you should
want to
wear
used.
Literally anything but that costume.
Right. Like I know the tentacles are fused to him, but the costume isn't. Like, there's the reason right. why he needs to still be wearing that all the time. He never takes it off.
I don't know. Choices for sure. Also, I will fully admit I'm like a sucker for a really good casual wink.
Okay.
That just like cuts deeply into your soul and it like melts me a little bit. J. Jonah Jameson pulls it off in this episode. It's real quick, but he like it's a moment where he's like, hey, Peter, you keep bringing me the footage. I'll keep writing your paychecks. And then he gives Peter a wink and I'm like, oh, this Jonah's charming.
Yeah. He's got a good mustache too.
Yeah. Good mustache. Good wink. Good smile. Direct eye contact.
Yeah.
He could buy me a drink. Yeah.
Sure, I'm into it. Yeah. Oh man, we were all over the place on this episode, but it really was just like, it's so funny because overall the episode is perfectly fine. Like I think generally watching it, it's a good episode. It's well constructed. It's just like these really weird, hyper specific quibbles about it that are just like very infuriating and also like very specific to the show too. I'm super excited to see where this goes, not just because I like the show, but also because like I'm so curious to see what we said pans out or doesn't and what we're like wildly wrong about, you know, like it is entirely possible so many worries that we have like are completely unfounded and like don't have anything to do with anything, you know.
Which I kind of really love fun. That we kind of went a little bit wild with the sort of like, is the sky falling, is everything bad now? And it could fully
I think
not
we explained
be
ourselves. I think we explained ourselves very well why we're in that weird state though, you know.
Right. If anybody walks away from this episode being like, wow, they think the show sucks now, I don't think you were listening very closely.
Yeah, fuck off. That's not, yeah.
I'm excited, though. We said it last week. I'm excited to be back in the show. I'm really excited to see what's up for these characters, even if it's not necessarily what I expected.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, if you're excited for us and want to hear more from us, why don't you join our Patreon at patreon.com/wallopingwebsnappers. It's a great place to get some cool bonus content. And if you want to chat with us or any other listeners of the show, check out our Discord. We got a link to that in the show notes. If you want to reach out to us individually, where can we find you, Doug?
You can find me all over the place at Ickybooley, I-C-K-Y-B-O-O-L-E-Y. You can listen to me on a podcast called Victory Road. It's a Pokemon podcast. You can also listen to me on a Glitter Job production called Novel Gaming, where my friend Katie and I get together and catch up on all the books and video games we have been consuming lately. What about you, Derek?
Sure, you can find me. I'm most active on Twitter at Derek B. Gale. I'm also active on other social media platforms as that name or Dare Bear, Mr. Dare Bear. You can also find my other podcast, Gimmicks, where my co-host David and I look at the high-concept, experimental, structure-breaking, gimmicky episodes of television. You can, of course, find that anywhere you get your podcasts. And you can find my Twitch at twitch.tv/MrDareBear, where I stream VHS recordings of old television airings with the original commercial. It is still spooky month right now, so I will definitely be streaming as many spooky or spooky-adjacent or Halloween-related stuff throughout the month. And if you would like to find other queer creators who talk about media, check out the Glitterjaw Queer Podcast Collective at glitterjaw.com. That includes our new monthly podcast, Screonk, a Godzilla movie marathon, where we're stomping through Godzilla's filmography. And to be clear, that is Doug and I. So if you like Doug and I talking together, that is the two of us talking about Godzilla movies, which is super exciting. Our intro episode, as you're listening, is already live, so you can find that feed anywhere you get your podcasts. And then our first full episode will be available this Friday on the original first Godzilla movie from 1954.
Hell yeah.
And of course, as always, you can visit us on our website at wallopingwebsnappers.com for a full archive of all of our episodes we do together. And you can follow Walloping Web Snappers on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Walloping Web Pod, or email us at wallopingwebsnapperspodcast@gmail.com. And of course, please rate, review, and subscribe on all podcast platforms. And next week, Spidey fights a brand new Doc Ock. What? What could that possibly mean in an episode Between an Ock and a Hard Place?
We are actually on video right now, and you might have literally seen me reacting in real time to that sentence, because I don't know what happens next week.
Because there's so many meanings that could have, right?
Right. Like, what that don't mean, know what that means. I'm very excited to find out. Well, see ya.
See you then.
Also, I'd like to pat myself on the back for never saying Neo Cortex, the character from Crash Bandicoot.